from its home marina in Rostock on 6th of September to the German island of Rügen, and then finally to the Danish island of Kristianstad, close to the site of the blast on 26th of September. Experts have questioned whether the amount of explosives used in the sabotage attacks, estimated to be several hundred kilograms of explosives, as well as with the necessary breathing apparatus and other equipment, could have been carried on such a small boat, raising the question of whether another vessel was involved. The German magazine Der Spiegel said that one of the six-person crew on the Andromeda was using a forged Bulgarian passport, but the German investigators have yet to identify the nationality of the bombers or attribute responsibility to any government. A New York Times report this week cited intelligence sources as saying a pro-Ukrainian group was involved, but German authorities have warned about the possibility of a false flag operation in which misleading clues are left deliberately to point in the wrong direction. The Ukrainian government has denied any involvement in the attack on the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, which were built to transport natural gas from Russia to Germany, and are majority-owned by the Russian state-owned company Gazprom. They were not operational at the time of the attack, which came 7 months after the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But they were filled with natural gas, which bubbled to the surface, creating a wide area of visible turbulence. The German magazine Der Spiegel quotes a harbourmaster in Rügen Island as saying the group that hired the Andromeda were dressed like normal sailors, and that he saw them carrying shopping bags of provisions to the boat, speaking a language that sounded Polish or Czech to him. He said there were several men and a woman. The Andromeda is a Bavaria C-50, a sailing boat made by German company Bavaria Yachts. It has 5 cabins and room for up to 11 people. It has a platform at the back to dive from. At the site of the blast, the Baltic Sea is about 80 meters deep, requiring specialist diving skills and specialist air tanks, one with a helium-oxygen mixture and one with pure oxygen, the Spiegel report said. Each dive would have required the boat to be over the pipeline for about 3 hours. To have laid explosives on 2 pipelines 4 kilometers apart would probably have required 4 dives over a period of a few days. Diving experts say such extended deep dives would have required a decompression chamber for the divers, which would not fit on a small yacht. There are also questions on whether there would be room for the required explosives. The Danish and Swedish governments have said that the blasts were equivalent to the power of several hundred kilograms of explosives. Some experts say up to 2,000 kilograms would have been needed. We have been presented a piece of a puzzle. However, we don't know how big the puzzle is. It is 50 pieces, 500 or 5,000 pieces, said Christian Molling, the head of the Center for Security and Defense at the German Council on Foreign Relations. Was there a second boat and did somebody transport the explosives from somewhere else? Christian Molling asked. So that's why I think there are pieces of the puzzle missing for the moment. The chair of the Bundestag's Intelligence Oversight Committee, Konstantin von Notz, has warned the press to be as cautious as possible with any conclusions at this point in time. Konstantin von Notz told the German magazine Die Zeit the investigation was very likely to be dealing with a state or quasi-state actor because it is very demanding to transport large quantities of explosives. Up to 2 tons are now being discussed, undetected, to the right place in the Baltic Sea, to transport them into a relevant depth in order to trigger several explosions in a controlled manner. He said a state-backed act of terrorism makes it more likely than false or deceptive clues were laid. The German public prosecutor's office has said that a boat had been searched between 18th and 20th of January over suspicions it could have been used to transport explosive devices that exploded on 26th of September 2022. European and US intelligence officials have obtained tentative intelligence to suggest a pro-Ukrainian saboteur group may have been behind the bombing of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines last year, according to reports in the New York Times and the German newspaper Die Zeit. German newspaper Die Zeit has also covered this story and tells us more. European and US intelligence officials have obtained tentative intelligence to suggest a pro-Ukrainian saboteur group may have been behind the bombing of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 gas pipelines last year, according to reports in the New York Times and the German newspaper Die Zeit. German investigators believe the attack on the pipelines was carried out by a team of six people, including a yacht that had been hired by a company registered in Poland and owned by two Ukrainian citizens, according to the German newspaper Die Zeit. The information has been shared between the European intelligence agencies in an effort to establish more information about those who carried out the undersea bombings in September, an attack that had left Western governments perplexed. Details about the intelligence remaining sketchy, and it is unclear what confidence the US intelligence community places in the theory, as well as who may have organized the effort, funded or directed such a daring attack on the gas pipelines running between Russia and Germany. But it is suggested that the government of Kiev did not direct the underwater strike. Russia says it wanted an independent international inquiry to be set up in response to the report. Its deputy envoy to the United Nations said Moscow would call for a vote at the United Nations Security Council on whether to launch an international investigation. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov on Wednesday, 8th of March, dismissed the US reports as a coordinated effort by the authors of the attack to divert attention. "How can American officials assume anything without an investigation?" said Dmitry Peskov, adding that Russia was still not allowed to be part of the investigation into this monstrous crime. Russia's embassy to the United States said on Wednesday, 8th of March, that leaks from U.S. intelligence services were no more than an attempt to confuse anybody who sincerely wishes to seek out the truth in this flagrant crime. It added, "It is simply a means of shifting suspicion from those in official government positions who ordered and coordinated the attacks in the Baltic Sea on the abstract individuals of some sort." A senior aide to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the government in Kiev was in no way involved in the attack, which he said had no military impact on Russian forces. "In the midst of a war, Ukraine and its allies would definitely not spend resources on something that would not bring us victory directly on the battlefield. It doesn't make any sense, but it is extremely beneficial for Russia itself to try to switch attention from the war and try to present itself as a kind of victim," he said. The attack took place in international waters in the Baltic Sea near the Danish island of Bornholm, with large amounts of gas rising up from the sea floor.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program of Viewpoint, and I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And we have two dear speaker guests here with me, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in this episode of today, we're going to discuss one of the most controversial issues of Islamic world about Palestinian issue. So, as you know, Palestine is one of the most valuable lands and regions in Islam thoughts and also other religions. So, in this episode, based on the leadership statements, we're going to discuss this issue.
She's standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents.
And everywhere in this world, the people, the youth people, are the next generation of leaders and the next decision makers. And particularly because we are Palestinian, and you know, we have been living under the Israeli occupation for more than 60 years, we have a more pardon in order to lead our nation and to fight for our rights, and also to try to develop the situation that the Palestinian people live in Palestine, in Jordan, in Syria, in Lebanon, which unfortunately is going from worse to worse each day.
The right of return is still the major cornerstone of the Palestinian issue. And as the Palestinians would say, though they don't live in Palestine, Palestine lives in their heart. So for all Palestinians, this is core to the whole issue. A lot of Palestinians do not benefit from the very thing which every other society, every other culture, every other civilization is able to benefit from, which is to pass on the progress and the fruits to their next generation. Palestinians, because of the fact that they are under occupation, because they are living as refugees, they are not able to prosper economically, they are not able to develop as a country, as a state, and as a culture and a civilization.
So, as you two just told me, there is a special depth in this supporting that we are actually making for Palestinian people. But here, there is another question. As you know, we have many values, we have many beautiful things, but there is still logic here. And we do something for a return, you know. If, for example, we are helping someone, we may expect that person help us in the future too. So, the question which arises here is that if Palestinian people, the place of Palestinian people were upside down, I mean, they were in our situation and we were in their situation, mm-hmm. everything was vice versa, would they help us in a way we are helping them? If yes, what is your special reason that you are telling me that yes, they would help us?
You see, let's consider this an issue from the perspective of Islam.
Yeah.
If they consider themselves as Muslims, they will definitely help us in the other way around. Especially considering that they have gone through the same oppression that we're going through the same oppression that they went through. A person seeing oppression from the human instinct goes against it, mm-hmm. right? When it comes to Islam, it's even further, the person will stand against that. So if you see so many Muslims around the world, not only in Iran is like, it's a government that is going against Israel, but you see so many groups, movements that are not necessarily backed by governments, but they stand because they're Muslims. So many non-Muslims against oppression, right?
Yeah.
If we see this picture, then definitely we can say the same for Palestinians, because Palestinians, among them, they're definitely people who are against oppression. The main fact that they're fighting, they're resisting this oppression on them, gives us the reason, gives us the notion that when they are on the opposite side, from the side of the supporter, they'll definitely support those who are fighting in the field.
Yeah.
Let me add one more point to the explanations of Brother Muhammad. And When we are helping a person who is in need, I mean, let's say a poor person, a needy person, actually we're not expecting something to get back to us. We're not actually expecting a day that he comes and compensate whatever had happened to him.
We have no such intention.
We have no such intention.
But from political viewpoint, we should have, you know.
Even, look, we are looking from an Islamic perspective. This is from an Islamic perspective. I mean, we are not expecting something to get back to us. Moreover, when we have Islamic principles and Islamic rulings, and everyone who is dedicated to Islamic rulings, he knows that it's his duty or her duty in this time to support Palestinians, whether he is living in Iran or he's living in another country. So if a person, an intellectual Muslim or a wise person, a wise Muslim, knows Islam well, knows that his duty is to help Palestinians at this time, right now. And we have many cases of Muslims, fortunately, plenty of Muslims, I can say, in different Islamic nations, majority of the people are with helping the Palestinian and are with this notion to help the Palestinian and the oppressed Palestinians. But the problem is with the government. The problem is with the Muslim leaders that we have, unfortunately, today. They are not representing the Islamic nations. There is, I think we have to differentiate between these two, mm-hmm. Islamic nations and Islamic leaders.
Yeah.
Islamic leaders, you might say, okay, these are the people who selected the Islamic leaders. No, it's not like that. A country like Saudi Arabia, are people selecting the government?
No.
Definitely no. So there is a sort of gap between these two, two fronts. So, fortunately, even if we were in their place, definitely all the Muslims would understand that who is the oppressor and who is the oppressor. And they will do the right, and they would do the needful at the right time, right?
Yeah. So, thank you for your explanation about these. But you are telling me that they would do that as a kind of thing that because they understand they are Muslims too. But what if their power weren't enough? I mean, what is our goal here? What are we doing for Palestinian people? The goal of us is the freedom of Palestine or referendum? What do we exactly want here?
We, based on our Islamic duties and and humanitarian duties, we are helping the person who is in need, the oppressed one, yeah. Whether he is, let's say, a Muslim
or a non-Muslim.
Again, it is again a good reason to enlighten the hearts of the people who are actually studying about our stances in the scene of the in international arena, to tell them that it's not important for us, for example, that a Muslim is under pressure, or let's say Jew or a Christian. This is the brilliant viewpoint of the leader of the Islamic Ummah. That was given to the international arena, that we are after the votes of the people of the Palestine. Either they are from Islamic Ummah, or mm-hmm. from Christianity, or from Judaism. So all of the votes are going to work here. So we are not going to deny the rights of the Jews that were there, and their rights, to ignore their rights.
Mm-hmm.
The same way is happening in our country. Look, different minorities have their own representatives in our Congress, you see, our parliament. In our parliament. You see, Jews have their representative, Christians have their representatives, and even the Zoroastrians have their own representative in our parliament. So this is what Islam says, the rights of the Muslims equals the rights of non-Muslims who are living, they are going to live peacefully together. So this is what we are after. We say, okay, just pay attention to the votes and to the voices of the people who have been living there.
Yeah.
And so, even further than that, I think it's important to understand that now this notion of referendum that is now surfacing the media and the world right now, why didn't they go after referendum at the beginning when they were expediting the entire that country? Why now that the country is in chaos? Why now that the population has been distributed in a way that it comes out to their favor, they're now going to go for referendum? You should have gone for a referendum at the beginning. Ask the people, are you ready to give your lands to these Zionists or not? You have to ask from the beginning. Now that you've usurped their lands, removed half their population, and even further than half, you've caused chaos in the region, then you say, okay, let's now discuss about it. This doesn't work like that.
So I got to know that, we have to maintain this human right everywhere, no matter it is Palestine or any other countries. But are we doing the right thing? I mean, what are we doing right now? We are, devoting a special budget for this issue, or we are claiming that we are supporting them. But what are the actions we are taking, actually? And are they the right actions to support these people?
As our brother Ali mentioned a few moments ago, that first of all, we're not expecting anything in return.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as the people get their rightful status, and we get our security that is long awaited,
are we getting
happy
it?
With it? Yeah, of course.
We're
in the path. Us, by our resistance, by sponsoring the resistance forces in the region and in Palestine itself, we were able to, remove this minor cancer, which initiated from the major cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a story. The leader of the Hamas, when they had the meeting with the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, when he returned, he says a very beautiful thing. He says that he thought that at the end of the mm-hmm. discussions, the leader will definitely ask him something from the Palestinian, like, oh, become Shias or whatever it is, right? He said that he had no such intention. He was all in the form of giving, helping them. There was no expectation from the leader. That's how we are. When we look, when we see this path of resistance, of fighting against this cancer in the region, we're not expecting anything. That's the first point. Mm. So once, as long as according to the ideology of justice, we're in the right path, going against oppression, we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
No matter how much budget, no matter how much money we set aside in the budget to fight this, as long as it's the right thing, as long as we're in line with the ideology of Islam, then we're doing the right thing.
Let me add a point to this. Actually, we're not fighting for the Palestinians. We're just supporting them.
Yeah, exactly.
We believe that the whole front of disbelief, the whole front of kufr, is supporting Israel. So what is our duty? Our duty is to support Palestinians. They're defending them with everything, with equipment, with even people to be sent there to, kill Muslims. We are just supporting Palestinians. We strengthen them. Yes, we train them. We do send equipment to them. For example, we do send missiles. And we teach them to how to make missiles because they need to defend their own rights. We believe that we are not going to go, for example, in the Palestinian fronts to, fight for the Palestinians. We want them to know themselves, to find them, their own selves. And they fight for their own selves, right? So this is the least thing that we are actually doing. But we are expecting the Islamic world to do so. But unfortunately, they are working on normalization of their ties with Israel. So this is a big, the big misfortune that we have it in Islamic Ummah, that we have been actually, we have been shattered.
Yeah.
That we don't see this unity among the Islamic Ummah. They are expected to help the Palestinians. Yes, some of them say, okay, we sent, send money for the Palestinians.
Yeah.
What is this money for? They need your support, man. They need your, stance in international. They need your stance in international arena. This is what works for the Palestinians. So we are doing the least help and the least support to the Palestinians to make them strengthen and to make them strong to help to defend themselves.
Thank you, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad, for your presence in this episode. So we are here standing for these people, helping them, supporting them most of all. The most important thing here is that we're not going to fight behalf of them. We are just supporting them to be free to find themselves, in a way that they should be. So it was all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you, dear brothers and dear listeners, for being here with us. And I bid you farewell and leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow.
as thine, tomorrow will be free. Father, to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt. The battle is thine. Tomorrow will be free. Battle is thine. Tomorrow will be free.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us contemplate on what Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, the 15th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has said about Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. The master of the command was named as Mahdi because he will dig out the Torah and other heavenly books from the cave in Antioch. He will judge among the people of the Torah according to the Torah, among the people of the Gospel according to the Gospel, among the people of the Psalms in accordance with the Psalms, among the people of the Quran in accordance with the Quran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Son of Abdullah.
Part 1.
Religions appeared one after another. All of them represented one God, one path, one origin, and one end to mankind. Every messenger who was appointed by God to convey his message informed the people of the advent of the last prophet of God. In this sense, Buddha and Krishna said the very same thing which Noah, Abraham, Moses, John, Zoroaster, and Jesus said. One told the name of the final prophet, and the other spoke of his origin. One forecast the signs of his homeland, while the other described the characteristics of his language. In one way or another, each prophet informed mankind of the joyous news of the advent of the final prophet, the last messenger of the heavens. In the very beginning of history, God sent Adam, his first prophet on earth. to propagate and show the heavenly path to the inhabitants of this world. Thousands of years have passed ever since, and some people continue to follow him by residing exclusively near the riverbanks of the world. Zoroastrianism is one of the most ancient religions of the world. These days, most of its followers are found in Iran, India, and some regions of Central Asia. They possess a heritage several thousand years old. Like the prophets before him, Zoroaster also informed his followers of the coming of divine prophets. The religious scripts of Zoroastrianism refer to these messengers as Sotients. There are three Sotients who were foretold to appear after the Zoroaster. Alternatively, three Sotients, three beneficent personalities, will come one after the other. Throughout history, the followers of Zoroaster have been waiting for their arrival. They have searched for them everywhere.
Attilo! What brings you here?
We are visitors from the east. We follow the star. The star of the prophecy.
The prophecy of the Messiah?
The Messiah!
So far, only three Zoroastrian sages have succeeded in seeing the first Sotient in Bethlehem. When the last prophet of God appeared in Hejaz, there were many Zoroastrians who saw the signs of the second Sotient in him. They joined him in large numbers and became his followers and helpers. However, there are still many Zoroastrians who are keenly waiting for the arrival of the third Sotient. They hope that this universal reformer will appear and make the world a utopia. In India, the land of many creeds, there are several mysterious religions spread out in the vast jungles and mountainous regions. You find religions such as Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. Though in some case, the followers of these religions have become deviated from the right path. The depth of meaning and spirituality that these religions reveal is indicative of man's inherent tendency to establish a close relationship with an infallible creator and worship him. Historical roots of Hinduism are spread over thousands of years. Mysterious ascetics with wonderful conducts live all over India, in colorful shrines and dark temples in legendary jungles. They make the unspeakable things of this mysterious land even more mysterious.
God is one only. Even in India, in the Hindu philosophy, God is always one. But his manifestation is many.
This historical religion has several holy books as guidelines for its followers. These books are full of strange and unsaid mysteries. Among the sacred books of Hindus are the Puranas. These ancient books contain the history of the universe, the genealogy of kings and heroes, and the foretelling of future events. In these books, we again witness indications of the coming of a spiritual teacher called Muhammad from a foreign land. To him is what Raja Bhuj respectfully says, "I prostrate myself before you, O you, the pride of mankind, the inhabitant of Arabia. You have gathered a great power to eradicate Satan."
In one of the Puranas in India, Bhavishya Purana, it is also mentioned that Muhammad, Paigambar Muhammad, will be born in the Middle East and he would cleanse the people of corruption and bad habits there, and, you know, he will bring a new wave of devotion. This is mentioned thousands of years ago in the Hindu texts, in a Purana. It's one verse is there, one quote is there, that such and such a person, a prediction was done about that.
He will appear in a sandy desert in the land of Arabia. He will be known as the pride of humanity, and his name is Muhammad. What could be the secret that has been also mentioned in the holy books of Hindus, and of which the Hindu monks have spoken? The history of Jainism goes back about 600 years before the appearance of Christ. According to Jainism, salvation can only be achieved through the practice of asceticism. The tenets of this faith dictate that God has 24 avatars on earth. The last one of them will be born in a peninsula, and the name of his father is Vishnu Bhagat, which is the equivalent of Abdullah. And the name of his mother is Somanib, which is the equivalent of Amina. He is said to be taught by Bhagwan in a cave. Sikhs, who wear a unique turban on their head, are followers of another religion in India. But are there any hints about the Holy Prophet of Islam and his religion in the scriptures of Sikhs? In addition to the promise made thousands of years ago by Eastern religions concerning the advent of a prophet called Muhammad in Arabia, Abrahamic religions also foretell the arrival of a great prophet on earth in the last age of humanity.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Salam Alaikum, welcome. This is today's special, and we're going to speak about how to use leisure time. Salamu Alaikum. Today, Sunday, is the 19th of Shaban, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 21st of Isfand, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 12th of March, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. For today, and from the Holy Quran, we choose chapter Az-Zumar, verse 56.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. An taqula nafsun ya hasrata ala ma farrattu fi janbillahi wa in kuntu laminas sakhirin.
Lest a soul should say, "Oh, how great is my regret over what I neglected in regard to Allah, and that I was among the mockers."
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Dear friend, the day of resurrection is the day of regret. Underrating divine injunctions, and worse than that, mocking them all spring from neglect, following the emphatic injunction as to repentance and comprehension for the past wrong deeds. The blessed verse in question is saying that these injunctions have been sent down less on the day of resurrection. One may say, "Woe to me that I failed to act upon divine command, and I mocked his verses and messengers."
Is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, and a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't
Remember, we start a new topic for this week, that was how to use leisure time. The blessing of time is one of the greatest blessings that Allah can bestow upon his slave. Allah even swears by time in some cases, as he says in chapter Al-Asr, that is chapter 103, verse 1, by Al-Asr, the time, because of the importance and blessing of time. And the Prophet of Islam said, make the most of five things before five others. Life before death, health before sickness, free time before becoming busy, youth before old age, and wealth before poverty. But most people are unaware of the importance of this blessing and are neglectful of their duties towards it, namely to fill it with acts of gratitude and obedience towards Allah. Prophet of Islam, Allah's peace and salutations be upon him and his pure progeny, said, there are two blessings which many people do not make the most of and thus lose out: good health and free time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today we are going to talk about the Islamic principles for leisure time. A commentary on the verse 77 of Surah Al-Qasas reads, use some of the wealth which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has bestowed on you for your hereafter by spending it in charity. Do not forget your portion of worldly life. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, forget not your health, power, leisure time. youth and vivacity and seek your afterlife through them. That is, through these five great blessings, which are health, power, leisure time, youth, and vivacity. The next principle that we are going to talk about, which is in Islamic principles with regard to leisure time, is including work and leisure time. In a system based on religious values, working is revered as something scared, and the people living in such a society are not alien to assiduousness. In such a culture, leisure time does not mean being idle or wasting one's time, but it means that one should spend all his time doing a purposeful activity. Proper leisure time in Quranic culture does not equal idleness and not doing anything. The Holy Quran says in this regard that, therefore, when thou art free from thine immediate task, still labor hard, and to thy Lord turn all thy attention. Since the theme of being free has not been stated in this holy verse, and the word labor is issued here to mean hard work, the verse seeks to articulate a general comprehensive principle, which is to remind Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam as a role model for humanity, not to get rest after doing an important task, and to keep on trying hard. This verse emphasizes finishing one job and engaging oneself with another. Thus, generally advises anybody not to remain idle and never stop trying hard, but try to start a new activity as soon as you finish one.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the
now, what are benefits of the leisure time? One of the benefits is productivity. What does it mean? Leisure time can be good for productivity. Our attention span is a limited resource. Multiple studies have shown that to learn something effectively, we need to take breaks. Even a brief amount of downtime allows our brains to consolidate and organize. Leisure time enables us to re-energize, recharge, and even gain a new perspective when we resume our regular activities. For those who have difficulty implementing leisure time in their routine, experts recommend using breaks and downtime to pursue activities that will benefit long-term goals. Some examples are ways that people can link a leisure activity to something they want to accomplish are playing a sport or improve physical fitness, cooking a meal to have a creative outlet and improve culinary skills. Whatever you choose, it's important to find an activity that suits your needs and interests. If you don't enjoy the activity, you're less likely to stick with it. Are you with us? So, we go for ways successful people spend their free time. Let's learn. They read. Yes, reading is a lifelong skill, and successful people never stop reading new books. Whether it's fiction or nonfiction, books help give you a greater understanding of the world around you. They introduce you to new characters, new environments, new cultures, new philosophies, and new ideas, and might even help you build new skills. If you're reading non-fiction, at least, similarly, reading regular helps to build your vocabulary and your semantic comprehension, giving you greater communication skills and something to make small talk about during those particularly awkward business meetings.
Brothers and sisters, every minute we waste is an act of injustice against our own selves. Because I could have used that minute to benefit, to go forward, to progress, to advance. But I wasted that minute. And this particular minute shall not come to me forever for good. I've lost that minute, that hour, that day, that month, that year. This is an act of injustice. When you oversleep, when you overeat, when you overindulge, these are all acts of injustice, not on your neighbors or friends, against your own self. Yes, sometimes you could be oppressing others, you know, if a spouse overeats and he or she is out of shape, you could be oppressing your spouse as well, or other people who are around you. But the point is, the first one to suffer is you yourself. When you're not progressing the way you should, if there are people in your class, at work, in society, who are progressing more than you, who are working harder than you, by not competing with them, by not being with them in the same level, you're actually harming your own self. If in your class, you're not the one who's working the hardest and studying the hardest, then realize without the slightest doubt that you're committing an act of injustice against yourself. This is why the Quran says, وَفِي ذَٰلِكَ فَلْيَتَنَافَسِ الْمُتَنَافِسُونَ. Yes, there is positive competition. Compete with everyone in society, but in a positive way, because there's negative competition. Compete with everyone, with the biggest one, with the most successful one. Because if you're not doing so, you're the one who's actually missing out by committing this great act of injustice against your own self.
I was so far from you, yet to me you were always so close. I wandered lost in the dark. I closed my eyes to all the signs you put in my way. I walked every day further.
Dear friends, dear believers, we hope you've made the most use of today's program. Please send your comments and suggestions. Please do keep us in your prayer. Fi amanillah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.